In the secret, bitter underground war for global power, there are scores of unwritten victories and defeats. Now, one incredible battle can be revealed. Watch the Batman and an infrequent ally, Green Lantern, plunge into the grip of a human devil and subject themselves to the ultimate demolishment.
Welcome to another edition of The Brave and the Bob, and I am here with a somewhat infrequent collaborator of mine. You usually hear his voice over on my All-Star Squadron JSA show, but he is joining me here to tackle a Brave and the Bold issue that is going to be a lot of fun. Welcome, my buddy, Ward Hill Terry, to the show. How are you, man?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Billy D. It's great to be here.
Yep, we're here on a nice, Saturday morning recording here, having some, our tea and our coffee and, talking about some crazy zany Haney comics, which, life can't get any better than this, right?
Nope. This is how you want to start your day.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Like, anybody doesn't want to start their day with Bob Haney, I don't know what they're thinking.
Blazes! You know how to start your day without Bob Haney.
And this is a comic here. You and I are going to talk about The Brave and the Bold, number 134, and it's a cover dated May 1977. And this is one that I don't know that I had read it, cover to cover before. I know I had a page through because I have this issue in a couple of different manners here. I have it in the Jim Aparo Legends of the Dark Knight Volume 2 hardcover. And then I also bought the Brave and the Bold Omnibus Edition. So I have, everything pretty much from, I don't know if it's like issue 80 something till the end. This was an interesting comic. I can't wait to hear what you have to say about it, my friend. But it's a Batman and Green Lantern team up, right?
Yes, it is. This is from my first year of collecting. So I was just starting to pick up more and more books. Thanks to Amazing Mike's Amazing Wonderful World of Comics, I was checking to see what I was buying this month. And I bought a lot of things for the first time. And this cover, Jim Aparo made me buy this comic. The cowering Batman holding a gun on Green Lantern explosive word bubble at the bottom. A hero reduced to a whimpering pup. And that grabbed me because pup was a word my dad would use as a sort of derisiveness. Don't be a pup. Mm-hmm. That ball player is acting like a pup. So it was not, it's not a flattering word for a man to be called a pup.
No.
So that's when I saw that. It's just, I had to buy this comic book.
And of course, there's a man standing over Batman pointing at Green Lantern saying, "Do not hesitate, kill." And we know, of course, bald means evil. So, that's, we know, right, who the bad guy is here, right?
Oh, boy. And he's got a military uniform with a red band on his collar and a gold star, so he's probably not a good soldier.
Yeah, this is a great cover. I like this quite a bit. It's interesting what Aparo chose to do here. It's basically like a black background or a darkened room, but there's almost like a spotlight coming down over GL and then spilling over onto the floor there, right?
Yes, I mean the cover is at that great angle like the Batman TV show would use, so it's tilted. And that shaft of orange triangle, and very cleverly, the bottom right-hand corner of the cover is a tiny bit of black. So we see that this is a spotlight kind of cone of orange, not just a wash of orange for half the cover. And Batman is in both the black behind him and the soldier behind him and the orange behind him in the foreground, holding there's a gun in his right hand, his left hand is holding his right wrist, his hand is shaking, he looks terrified. Green Lantern also, even though he's the man without fear, he looks to have great concern. I love it. I'm the more I'm staring at it, the more things that I'm looking at that I enjoy. I'm loving the ink work that Jim Aparo did on Batman's right calf. It looks like a Terry Austin kind of line. Shadow of the capsules on the utility belt, the colonel's right hand, his forefinger is casting a shadow on the middle finger. It's just a little tiny touch. I think it's great.
It's fantastic. And a couple of things that I did notice. So when, I don't know why they do this, but, you know, sometimes when they reprint Silver and Bronze Age stuff in like omnibus editions and trade paperbacks, all that stuff, they change colors for some reason. And I don't understand why, because when you go on to, like you said, Mike's Amazing World or comics.org, whatever, and you look at this comic, everything looks exactly the same, except that light coming down on the original comic, like you said, is orange, and they changed it to like a pinkish color in the collections, which I'm not sure why they did that.
Really?
Yeah, it's not great. And again, it's still a really awesome cover, but I'm like, what, did they run out of orange color at the printers that day or what? Like, why did they do that?
That's very odd.
It drives me crazy. But one thing, go ahead.
The orange is, you know, orange and green are complementary colors to the primary colors. So we have, there's not a lot of primary color here, just the Batman's cape and his belt. Everything else is green and orange with the black. So that's why the orange is so important.
Yeah, the orange, when I'm looking at it online, really makes it a pop, where the pink kind of dulls it down a little bit. And I'm just like, you know, again, it's still a great cover. The composition, like you said, Jim Aparo's the man. He's my favorite DC artist. I just love his work. But there's something, too, like when I looked at this cover, and I looked back and forth in this hardcover I have, a few issues before and a few issues after. Now, they don't do this all the time, but I did notice some of the time they will color the DC Bullet logo in the color, the primary color of the hero that's teaming up with Batman. So it's green here.
Yes, it is.
And I look forward and I saw one with the Demon and it was red. I saw a cover with, you know, another hero and it's yellow and there's, you know, like Miracle Man or somebody, you know what I mean? So they did that in a few issues, but not all the time. Like it was only like every maybe third or fourth issue that logo was colored, you know, the same color of the primary color of the hero who was in the issue here with Batman. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I wonder if that was, how deliberate that was.
Yeah, I always, again, I probably looked at these covers like 100 times and it just popped out right now, you know, as I was, you know, getting ready to prepare here. It's like, oh, wait a minute, because, you know, like there's an issue with Hawkman where it's just blue, like Batman blue. And it's like, okay, cool. And then, like I said, there's an issue where it's Wonder Woman and, you know, she's got a bit of red on her boots and in her costume. So the DC Bullet logo's red. And it's just, you know, it really stood out to me. I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, red and blue. I'm just doing a quick glance here at Mike's page. They seem to be the most often used bullet colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, the Dead Man one is red for the previous issue, 133. Now, this one doesn't make any sense. So it's Batman and Richard Dragon, but it's blue, like Batman blue. And I thought, well, you know, Richard Dragon, you could have used red or yellow even there. That would have been cool, but... Yeah, it's just weird. It doesn't always coincide, but sometimes it does. And I'm just like, oh, cool. I hopefully they did that on purpose. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, all right. Well, why don't we jump in here? So this is, like I said, Brave and the Bold 134. And this is, like we said, cover, pencils, and inks are Jim Aparo. It's fantastic. And the colors were by Tatiana Wood on the cover. Now, when you dive in here to the story, Demolishment, it's scripted by Zany Bob Haney. And then pencils, inks, and letters by Jim Aparo, as he famously did a lot during this era, right?
He did everything all by himself. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it wasn't the only thing he did for DC this month, too. So think about that, kids.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's take a quick look. He did the cover for DC Superstars Secret Origin of Supervillains, which I also bought this month. Mm-hmm. And... he did the cover for Detective Comics, Dr. Phosphorus.
Ooh, I like that guy.
Not the interiors.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so he did at least
a minimum
three.
Of what he had published on this month anyway. Oh, no. You know what? He did Adventure Comics 451 cover as and I believe interior, because that's Aquaman.
Wow. So there you go. He did four covers, two interiors, and on those interior comics, he most likely did pencils, inks, and letters. That's insane.
Exactly. This is when Aparo was the comic book, he drew it, he inked it, and he lettered it himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a workhorse. That's what that's called.
High quality stuff.
Yeah, a publisher's dream employee right there. Hopefully he got paid to pencil, ink, and letter as if it would have been done separately. I don't know. Hopefully he didn't take a discount there, think Jim. Oh, man. So, all right. Well, let's jump in here. There's a little synopsis here on the DC Fandom website, and then it just says Green Lantern defects to a European country, and Batman is ordered to retrieve him. Batman is then captured and subjected to torture, part of a process called the demolishment, including spending days in a sensory deprivation tank that had a test subject go mad within 2 days. So let's just jump in from there, you and I. We can forego any more embellishment here from the DC Fandom website. And why don't we start out with this first page here? So now it never says where this takes place, but this is obviously Germany, right?
No, it is not obviously Germany. I'm gonna stop you right there, because one of the reasons I wanted to do this story with you, another great podcast talked about this comic, and I think they were rather dismissive of it. One can be dismissive of Bob Haney's writing. That's easy. That's fine. That's fair. But I don't think that these two hosts gave this a proper reading, and neither have you, my friend, because this is not Germany. This is a fast gliding river that divides west from east. And you're a little bit younger than I am. This is in the age of the 70s in the Cold War. It wasn't just Germany, and it was not even just the Soviet Union in the Iron Curtain, because there's also the nation of Yugoslavia, which was not officially part of the Soviet Union, but was, you know, in the same sphere, but their own strongman dictator. So you could have a lot of fictional stories, and certainly the comics did this a lot, and a lot of television did as well, and motion pictures. I mean, every agent that Steve Austin, the $6 million man, faced was, you know, red. And if he wasn't obviously a Chinese-looking individual, then we could assume he was a Slavic of some kind. So this particular checkpoint is definitively not Germany, but it's somewhere else along the Iron Curtain. It could be anywhere from Estonia through Yugoslavia to Albania.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that, but yeah, there was a lot of that going on too.
And it's deliberately not a satellite nation, I think.
Yeah, well, apparel here, man. Oh my gosh, this first page that shows, a lot of these first pages usually start off with a huge splash page, and you know, it's like right in your face, which is cool, and I love that. But he chose to start out here with a little bit more of a, I won't say a quiet scene, but initially a first couple of panels here with just some mystery going on, and not necessarily the big bombastic splash page, right?
Yeah, it could be a spy book, a war book, a little bit of each, actually.
Yeah, we see a gentleman. We don't know who this is.
Across the bridge and being shot at by some soldiers in a jeep.
Yeah, it says he has a permit to get across to the other side, and he pedals over to the other side. But just as he gets across from it, we hear, "Hold it! That guy's a phony. After him!" And like you said, they start shooting at him. And this is interesting. So at first, I thought, "What did he do? Throw a grenade at this jeep?" Because the color in the reprint here, at least, is yellow.
So yellow in the original, and either that's a mistake, or I don't know if the colorist was told to, you know, try to obfuscate who this character is, even though we know who the character is.
Yeah, we've seen the cover.
Yeah.
But what about that panel of the Jeep exploding there? Oh, that is so good.
That is great. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Soldiers diving to safety as the Jeep explodes. Even that little tiny panel, this great detail in the tire tread and on the grill of the Jeep. And in the third panel, there's a big white star on the green Jeep. So we can assume that that is at least United States affiliated Jeep.
Yeah. And it's interesting. So then, you know, you flip the page and now we get these giant, you know, here's the bombastic part we were usually getting on the splash page, but now he saved it for pages 2 and 3 here, right, where we see GL, he arrives, and these rough looking guys, which these are definitely the bad guys here, they make him hand over his ring here, right?
Yes, and then they beat him up.
Yeah, that's
he gets beat up bad.
pistol whipped here.
Yeah.
Really nasty. There's people
kicked and hit with the guns. Yeah.
Yeah, he gets the crap beat out of him here, and then he starts to fight back a little bit, and then somebody hits him over the head with, assumedly, a gun, the butt of a gun, and knocks him completely out. And then later, the office of Colonel Miklos Vakla, Chief of Intelligence, and we see he's got I'm just noticing this now, too. He's got a hammer and sickle there, flag, so he's a commie.
He's and, a commie. There are no stars. It's not officially the flag of the USSR.
And GL says, why the rough
communist symbol?
Why the rough reception? I'm defecting. Coming over to your side, plenty of U.S. aeronautical secrets. And the guy says, of course, Green Lantern, and you are welcome. But do you think we are fools? We know from your contact with our agents in the USA that you are bitter from lack of employment in your civilian identity. I was like, wow, that's all it took for Hal to become a commie?
It's happened.
And he goes, we know you were disenchanted with America's corruption and foreign policy. Well, he's not wrong there. But he says, but when a man turns traitor and forsakes all he knows and loves, we are naturally very suspicious. So they're like, sure, you can defect here, but we're going to put you to the test to make sure you're not, putting one over on us, right?
Yeah. So it's a very intriguing setup. When I got this comic, like I said, I was a... I shouldn't have said, like I said. I hate when people say that on podcasts. You've heard me say it. I was still new to these characters. And I see that this month, not only did I first start buying Brave and the Bold, I also bought my first issue of Batman and my first issue of Detective. This is a great month to start reading.
Wow. Batman. Yeah.
But I've been buying Justice League for three issues now, three or four issues. So that's all I knew of Green Lantern. I hadn't started buying his book, but I'd start with Green Lantern next month. So I knew nothing about Green Lantern. So when I read this as a new reader, I can easily believe that this guy has no job in the United States because I know nothing about him. Because in pop culture, Clark Kent, he's a reporter for a newspaper.
Yeah.
The Flash, he's a police scientist. We know who a lot of these people are. The half dozen rich Playboy guys as well.
Yes.
But the secret identity occupation is pretty well established for a lot of superhero characters. But I couldn't remember that Hal Jordan, and I probably had flipped through in that book you mentioned earlier, the DC Superheroes Origin book, love that book, that he had been a test pilot. But being a test pilot was, a job of the 1950s. You didn't hear much in popular culture in 1977 about test pilots. I'm sure there still are test pilots, no doubt about it. But that was a lot more secret stuff by then. Or more mundane, testing a new jet from Boeing. So, and Green Lantern, was he a test pilot or not? He was not a test pilot anymore. I don't know what he was. It wasn't part of knowing anything. It wasn't part of his appearances in Justice League. He was just Green Lantern. So I saw that and said, okay, I can buy that. This guy is trying to defect because he's having a lousy time of it. I bought it. I bought it entirely.
Well, the guy wants to know if his betrayal is genuine. So he says, we're going to, test you. And he goes, throw him in a cell. And this is one of my favorite slams of all time. Green Lantern says, what? Why, you crumb. You can't treat me this way. I love crumb. But they beat on him a little bit more here, and they do throw him in a cell. But, we see a newscaster then in the BBC saying Green Lantern's defected, a gentleman reading an Italian newspaper. An Asian man, I'm not sure if he's, there's like some kind of machine there with something printing out. So I don't know if that's
like
something.
It looks like a teletype machine. It looks like he might be speaking. It looks Korean. I don't know enough of Korean idioms to know if that's authentic or not.
Yeah, but somebody help us out here.
One panel montage showing us that this world, the word has spread around the world that Green Lantern has defected.
Right. And then, of course, we need to go to Washington, D.C., and there's a gentleman who says, your mission is clear, Batman. And Batman says, certainly, I'm going to slip into the People's Republic and bring back Green Lantern. And if I can't do that, I'm to kill him. And the guy says, exactly, and you must not fail. And they're actually not even, it looks like they're in a, you know, office, but then when you see those, that other panel, there's a van. So I thought to myself, is this van supposed to be listening in on what they're doing?
They are listening in. Those are spies. They know what Batman's going to do.
Okay. I feel like a younger reader, a much younger reader than you and I, might not get that by that panel there. Of course, that's what I thought and you thought right away, but I'm just thinking, they think maybe they're really in van having this conversation. So I thought they might not, you know, the people that are post-Cold War might not, you know, kind of have that mentality.
There are some transitions in scenes and they're a little unclear. And I think when I was back when I was 12 and a half reading this, I just took everything at face value and just kept rolling. Okay, yeah, Batman's going to get Green Lantern. Batman's working for the U.S. Batman's a good guy. That's all I needed to know.
Yeah, and I think part of that, too, it could be, you know, I just had a recording last night where we were covering a DC comic from 1973, just 4 years earlier than this, and the page count was 23 pages. Well, it's the late 70s, so the price went up a few cents, and the page count went down. So this is only a 17-page story, so I kind of felt like maybe, you know, Aparo had to kind of squish things down here and not have a couple more transitions because he had 5-6 less pages to do it, right?
Yeah, and, you know, that's also – that speaks to the economy of storytelling. And so things are happening quickly. The previous page, we had a montage in one panel. Here, we have Batman getting his assignment and going halfway around the world in without having, you know, a panel of Bruce Wayne or Batman getting on a plane or parachuting out of the plane, the couple panels of the plane traveling. No. We skip right from Washington to Batman has already landed on the ground and now he's putting away his parachute, but not telling us he's putting away his parachute. Aparo's showing it to us. If you don't understand it, he doesn't say what he just did. We have to put it all together. Batman has.
Yeah, gone. I mean, 2 days later, a remote high pasture, half a world away. Boom, you're half a world away from one panel to the next. It's that that quick. And yeah, Batman, he says. Even an eagle would have had a tough time dropping in here. Good. That means the bad hats won't be around. And then he sees a guy, like it looks like a guy tending a flock of sheep. And he says, but my contact man, Dodge, should be there. He is. And he goes over and says, Dodge, I'm Batman. And he goes, his eyes terrified. And then he turns around and he goes, soldiers. And there's a soldiers with some machine guns here. And another guy with a knife, and they just come right at him, and he takes care of them with, you know, somewhat ease, but then he tries to run away, and he looks like he gets shot here, right?
Yes, he gets shot in the left shoulder. There's even a bandage of it.
Yeah. Don't see that happen too often. Sequence.
Yeah. God bless Jim Aparo. Small panels, and he has a big fight, Batman against two soldiers, and he avoids one and gives him a chop to the back of the head, and then he grabs the one coming out of the knife, throws him over himself, then somehow he grabs both of these guys and slams their heads together behind his back.
It sounds ludicrous, but Aparo did a great job here.
Oh doesn't it look great though?
Yeah, it does. And again, in one panel, Batman probably continued his motion forward to hide behind these, you know, this rock formation.
Yeah.
And a guy was able to pull his pistol and get a shot off. And like you said, hit him in the shoulder because he goes, time for this bat to fly. Ugh. And it shoots him right in the shoulder and he hits the ground like a ton of bricks. Yeah. And then some hours later, which, you know, Haney, he's very famous for this. He constantly was like his transitions later, some hours later, after a while, it was great. Yes. I love just looking at those transitions, but Batman's captured.
To keep it moving.
Yeah, what do you think of that panel there at the bottom of the page?
With the Green Lantern
left
silhouette.
Side. Yeah, what about that?
Isn't that wonderful? With just his Green Lantern chest emblem visible, everything else in shadow.
And our buddy here, not only
tilted angle.
Not only we know he's, you know, evil because he's bald, but he also has a cigarette holder. So in now we know he's like, yeah, he's double evil.
Here's another thing about that one panel, Billy, with the Green Lantern silhouette. It's on an angle. Mm-hmm. So it's at the bottom left corner of the page. And in this composition, we have the Green Lantern in silhouette in the foreground on the far right. There are four men behind him, including mm-hmm. Batman. There's a doorway indicating a very thick wall. And one of those four men is behind on the other side of the doorway. Mm-hmm. And we got that nice circle of light around the door in the men. And we got the vertical image of the smoke from the fella's cigarette. His arm's in shadow. That panel by itself, man. It's just, this is how you draw comics. How you put a lot of mm-hmm. elements in. How you can indicate things. We get a sense of depth there. No one's really doing anything, but we get a sense of space and motion, especially yeah. when Batman slugs Green Lantern, next panel.
Crack. I love it. But yeah, like you said, five people in that small panel. It's just, I don't know if anybody was better at using less space than Aparo. That's just fantastic. Oh my gosh. But yeah, he cracks him and punches him, you lousy traitor, and then restrain him. And the big boss says, yes, our agents in America told us of your secret mission. Okay, so there's tying back to the flower truck that was mm-hmm. listening in outside of, that was supposed to be the Pentagon there or the Capitol building. I'm not sure, but that's how you kind of tie that back to that, right? And he says, yep. He goes, Batman, and your angry assault on your ex-ally is most convincing, just as his sudden remorse as being a traitor. But again, this guy is not convinced either of these guys are on the level. He's going to, you know, put Batman through some torture here. He's Batman's taken a wrong turn, a left turn at Albuquerque, I guess, and ended up at Gitmo here. So he's going to be yes. put through the ringer here, right?
He's been caught, and the Green Lantern's been beat up, and Aparo's done a great job making his face all puffy and bruised.
Mm-hmm. And he goes, hey, what happened to you? And he goes, what I deserved. I welcome it. Colonel Vakla must be sure I've really defected. No suffering is too great to prove my loyalty to the People's Republic. And the guy's just puffing on his cigarette and getting himself a cup of coffee and says, a pretty speech, but I did not become chief of intelligence by playing the gullible ox. Perhaps Green Lantern is faking, or perhaps not. These aeronautical secrets he has given us are the little potatoes. Our agents in America dug them up long ago. And Green Lantern says, I didn't know that. I know other secrets, important ones. And the guy says, perhaps, but the crucial test of your loyalty will be how you react to watching us use the demolishment on your old friend, Batman. So they're going to torture the crap out of Batman to see if GL's on the level. Lantern.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they get the demolishment ready, as they call it. So first up is drugs. They use all these drugs on him, which is, again, this is a really good page here, page 8, where, you know, you see a long panel where Green Lantern and this Colonel Vakla guy are looking down from, like, an enclosure at these the scientists or whatever, if you will, doctors performing this drugging on Batman, right?
Yeah. First, they're testing to see if he's, you know, if Green Lantern did something to his head to protect him before he got there. And they find him compassionate.
Yeah, that was wild. I was like, can the Lantern Ring really do that?
Oh, yeah, sure. They can do whatever the plot needs it to be, Billy. You know that.
Sure. It's Bob Haney. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah. But then we have a nice little thing that stuck with me for a long time. One of these doctors doing the test on Batman, but he's got some sort of syringe in his left hand. My colonel, mind-altering drugs of great potency have little effect on him. Then he must have taken an antidote. A sure clue. His mission and your defection, Green Lantern, are the plot. And Green Lantern says, no way. Batman has long been immune to drugs. He had special nerve treatments to guard against criminals using drugs on him. And that word balloon stuck with me through, like, every Batman story I ever read for the next 10 years. And if Batman was affected by some sort of narcotic or gas or drug or something, I would think to myself, no, that's what happened to Batman.
Yeah.
I read this in a Raven the Bold story once, that the drugs don't affect him.
or at least they wouldn't affect him anywhere near as much as they would, you know, a regular Joe. So that's actually really cool of, you know, Haney to put in there. I like that.
It's a cool touch. And even if it was never referred to before and never referred to again, it helps move the story along.
Yeah, and you figure if you were a writer that came post Haney, you read these comics, that's something for you to use down the road as well. You know, that's something he's passing on to Ernie Bell, saying, hey, I use this in a comic once. You can use it to be like, hey, this is how Batman got out of this, trouble here. So that's great. That's really cool. But now we move on to that.
See, editor's note. See Brave and the Bold, number 134.
Yeah, absolutely. Rascally Roy. But, you know, here's the part where, you know, I mentioned that they use this sensory deprivation tank on Batman here. So they have this, like, band around his eyes. They have oxygen going to him, but then they have him, like, chained to these flotation devices in this tank. And he's just, like, kind of hanging out there. And it says, he is completely out of touch with the reality, alone with only his breathing. And then it says, soon he loses all contact with the outside world, losing his identity, and finally, his sanity. And then he goes, we had the test cases in the tank who went mad in only 2 days, but then they were not the Batman. And GL, it's horrible. What do you think of this scene?
It's a great design by Aparo, the sensory deprivation tank. He gave it some thought there. So he can't see, he can't hear. There's nothing to taste or smell. His rebreathing apparatus looks a little small. Maybe he should have put a more of a fuller face mask on him. His nose doesn't seem to be covered in this particular instance. But the way that he's he's got these. It looks like two flotation buoyant tubes on the surface of the water with cables leading down to them, with these cuffs around Batman's knees and elbows, which is a cool idea. Not his wrists and ankles, knees and elbows to support him. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is great. And the guy says, fantastic. The bat is even more steel-willed than I believed. And one of the technicians says, my colonel, he keeps repeating some gibberish over and over, which sounds like Joe Chill, Joe Chill. And the guy says, good, he is cracking. But then Green Lantern thinks something to himself here, right? He has a thought bubble.
Yeah, the Green Lantern thinks, Vankla doesn't know Batman using the name of the man who killed his parents like a mantra, repeating that hated name over and over to hang on to his sanity. And there's a whole helpful editor's note there from mantra. Note, mantra, in Buddhist religion, an oft-repeated word or phrase invoking the true reality of the universe. When I read this the very first time, I did not know who murdered Batman's parents.
Yeah,
I didn't know what a mantra was. And on this page, I get further proof and evidence of Batman's resiliency and his toughness and his motivation and his origin and a little bit of a culture, expanded culture of another idea.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's probably changed 15 times whether or not Joe Chill did murder his parents or it was someone else between then and now. But
look, if Bob Haney can respect one piece of continuity, I'm all for it.
We all should. Yeah. Well, the guy says that the Batman survived the tank, but it has softened him up. The theater of the absurd. We'll finish the demolishment. Now, I wish Haney could have thought of a better word than that. And I'll tell you, when you flip the page and you see what Aparo did here, it's almost like they're using some kind of hallucinogenic type thing on Batman where there are all these. It's almost like they took a room where they painted all sorts of crazy stuff on it. And Batman is like strapped to a device where it's almost like you go to an amusement park. They had something similar to this. Now, it wasn't for just one person. It was, you know, probably 20 kids could get on this thing at a time. But it was sort of like this, where you would go into this room and you would get in this thing and you would go around in a circle and then they would make it go backwards too. And they would play, you know, whatever music was cool at the time. And it was pitch dark with all these lights flashing and stuff like that. So I feel like if I survive that, the Batman can survive this.
Well,
this was when he started doing chair like they used to test astronauts for to withstand G-forces. And
yeah.
I understand it. It's constant noise and lights in the imagery. It's also, have you ever seen the film Clockwork Orange?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So remember that scene where they're trying to break Alex, they're keeping his eyes open and they're making wild
things? Oh, yeah.
I think
that's
this
so creepy.
Yeah, this is the same. And Haney did a lot of that riffing off of popular movies and popular culture.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's this part of it. So they're making Batman watch horrible, horrible things. Just, you know, despicable acts of depravity and violence and cruelty.
Yeah, I mean, the images starting from the left, I almost thought, is that like, is he trying to show like an image from the Holocaust there, maybe? That's
possibly,
really, really disturbing.
It is disturbing. The more you think about what you're actually seeing, in the one to the left of that, that looks like it could be a city being destroyed, maybe in a nuclear thing. The panel that's the clearest, of course, is just all squiggly lines. There's no real imagery there. Then we have a woman being chased by a guy with an axe, which made me think now, as a grown-up and knowing more about stuff, and not a 12-year-old, that, man, they could be showing Batman snuff films.
They could be. Where's Nicolas Cage here?
Yeah, and Batman being Batman, seeing, you know, someone being murdered and being helpless to do anything about it, that'd be really disturbing to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's really crazy, and it
the
does show
awesome a picture of Batman with a long white beard and a cane.
And what about that panel at the bottom left there? I thought that was really great by Apparel too, that close up on Batman.
Yeah, and I hope that coloring was deliberate with the yellow face and the greens and the purples there. It looks really odd.
Yeah, Batman's skin tone, even like this like pale yellow.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks really, really good.
With his eyes squinched shut.
Yeah, and then they said, the subject has fainted, Colonel. And he goes, the brain's final defense, an attempt to stop demolishment by blocking out all input. Revive him. And they revive him. And here's where, you know, we kind of get a little crazy here, too. So Batman says, I'm okay. You can't beat me. And GL says, he has survived your demolishment. And the Colonel says, but he has not. What he has gone through is not the demolishment. It was just the old brainwashing technique, what your sports mad Americans would call the warmer upper. I was like, what? Oh, that's fantastic. And he goes, no, behind that door waits the real demolishment. You have yet to begin your test, mighty hero. And Batman passes out. And he says, falls over.
Can't take anymore. He starts talking like Captain Kirk. I can't take anymore. I give up. I'll do anything. Mercy. Mercy.
And he falls down, and then the colonel says, you know, Batman says, I'll do anything, mercy, mercy. And he goes, anything, scum, then kill, Green Lantern. And here's where we hearken back to the cover, right?
And look at that. There's a scene in the comic that takes place, scene in the cover that takes place in the comic.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so fantastic. Yeah, it's fantastic.
And pow, pow, pow.
Mm-hmm. And again, that look at that. It's just like, again, Apparel just does a single panel with the gun. You can see the barrel and the bullets coming out. And like I said, that pow, pow, pow and a red background. Oh, that's just great.
How can you not turn the page now?
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you turn the page and I'm alive. He couldn't have missed. And the colonel says, of course not. The gun was loaded with blanks, but it proves he has cracked completely. That was the final part of the demolishment. And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, I thought he said what was beyond the door was the final part. And what happens when he kicks open the door?
Yeah, that was the final part of the demolishment. To tell him he had not even begun it. A lie. For as you see, what lies beyond the door is freedom. And there's a gorgeous, idyllic
countryside here, yeah.
Countryside. But the mountain, the background, lovely daylight, tree in full flower.
That's great.
This space wasn't, you know, an underground chamber in some horrible Eastern Bloc city.
And then I love the next panel. Batman falls down and he's grabbing onto the colonel's shirt and he says, please don't hurt me anymore, please. And GL says, Batman, crying like a child, that I live to see this day. The colonel then says, I'll reduce him to a vegetable before I'm done. It's like, wow, holy crap.
Great close-up of GL's face, and he's still swollen from being beat up.
Mm-hmm. He goes, no, stop. I never counted on this. Take us out of this hell factory, back to your office. I have a confession to make. And he goes, aha! This is great. And GL tells him, yes, it was all a plot from the beginning. My defection, including the escape across the bridge, was fate. Part of a well-planned scheme to fool you. And there's Batman in the background of that panel, like, seemingly passed out, right?
Yeah, sitting in the chair.
Just as I always suspected. And then he goes into the background here and says, Batman was sent to bring me back so you'd believe my defection was genuine. Uncle Sam leaked Batman's mission to your secret listening posts. And I'm assuming that's those guys in the van there, right?
That's part of it, yeah. So this was all a setup. So mm-hmm. they weren't spying on Batman. They were meant to get the information.
It was a trap. Mm-hmm. Yep. They're like, we knew you were spying, so we fed you false information, you know, or the information we wanted you to have.
They wanted Batman to get caught. That was the whole point of it. They want Batman to go through the demolishment so they know what the demolishment is. So that we could train our agents to combat it if captured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he basically does tell the truth here in saying, we thought we had every angle figured except one. We thought the Batman would hold up under the demolishment. Then together we'd make our escape with the brainwashing data tucked away in his head. And the colonel says, very, very clever for decadent Americans. But seeing your friend reduced to a sobbing child and powerless yourself, you decided to confess. And GL says, yes. I beg you, don't torture Batman anymore. I'll do anything. The colonel says, I must give it some thought. And once more, he says, I am not the gullible ox. I thought, Haney, you used that like 3 pages ago. Like, you have to get something else, bro.
He used like 5 times in 3, it feels like.
But it's interesting.
I remember not really being clear on what that meant. Is it a reference to some sort of other ox? I think I know what gullible means. I'm not sure. It's very odd. I get it now. It's sort of like a dialect he's talking in. I am not the gullible ox.
Yeah, and right before this scene, I had forgotten that they took his ring off of him. I completely forgot about that.
First thing, man, they took his disguise, took his ring, beat him up.
Yeah, and then Batman's laying there, and he goes, he's thinking to himself, you know, where's the ring? Not there, not hidden in the chair, but it must be somewhere here. Sure, it had to be in the samovar, and we see our buddy going to get a coffee here, or a tea, and GL then, a great close-up just on his eye here, where he's, what about that?
I love that. And he starts saying his oath.
Mm-hmm.
Right, his name, evil sight. Worship, beware. Green Lantern's light. And suddenly a big fist comes out of the samovar and slugs the girl.
Yeah, that is fantastic. And it shows like his big lantern there above the device. And it's like, wow, this is really cool. And then it smashes the device, makes it into like a hammer, and he says, come to Papa, and the ring flies over to him.
It's a great drawing of his hand too.
Yeah.
Puts Batman in a sort of green bubble and starts running away.
Yeah, he says, now to shake the decadent dust off the people's nightmare from my boots. And then the colonel, they escape. Shoot, fools, shoot. And they go to start shooting. But again, now he's got his ring, so he can easily stop these guys. And then he pulls a Wizard of Oz here. What do you think of this?
He makes a hot air balloon, too groggy from the beating to fully use the ring. So I can only manage a lighter than air balloon to hedgehop us toward the border.
Mm-hmm. And he goes, it's just as well. If we flew full power at higher altitude, they'd fire missiles and my reduced energy wouldn't be able to protect us. And there they go off into the sunset. But suddenly, and there's a commie aircraft here after them.
Yeah. Rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat. A jet unloading everything at us. She dents, but she holds.
Green Lantern with the lines around his head there to show some distress. I love it.
Yeah.
And then he's coming back for another pass. Old Gondola may not hold this time. And he has a plan here. So he grabs the Batman and jumps out. And as he's jumping out, he sends a green construct missile towards the jet, right?
Yep, and wham, destroys the jet.
Yep, it but then
makes a green mattress for them to fall on.
Yeah, that's fantastic. He goes, the plane's taken care of, so I can spare energy to provide us with a happy landing. And I'm thinking, man, that's a really high fall there, dude. I don't know if a mattress
is coming.
It sure
is. Maybe he had just enough willpower to sort of help glide them down.
Let's hope. But some hours later, another great Haney transition here, where an old bridge spans a river between two worlds, two ways of life. And he's thinking, Batman's still in the days stashed in the hay, and I can't chance a powering Gambit without maybe unleashing World War III. So I'll have to try and fool our way home. And they get to the border here, and our buddy the Colonel's waiting, uh-oh, right?
There's Pakla. Halt, peasant.
And then he looks back, and there's Batman's hand sticking out of the hay.
He doesn't realize what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. What have we here?
Telltale fumbling hand of a once mighty hero. And he grabs Vakla, pulls him into the hay wagon. Drive, Lantern, drive! And then, so the Green Lantern, in his disguise, he's got his authentic Ben Grimm disguise kit.
Mm-hmm.
Of a big hat and raincoat. using his green energy to make a whip to spur the horses on. The horses look terrified.
Yeah, they look really good, though. I got to admit, animals are extremely tough to draw. You know, a lot of comic book artists will tell you animals and even children sometimes are very, very tough to draw. And man, Aparo, he draws one really good horse here we can see straight on. And then the other one, just part of the face and the eye. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, Batman throws Essequo across the bridge, which we established in the very first page, this bridge across the river. And he throws Vakla into the river.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. I thought, I hope they're on the side of the bridge where it goes into the river and not, you know, just the embankment or something. Because if so, Vakla might be not with us anymore.
He's a commie.
Well, it says, and 100 desperate yards later, GL says, incredible, we made it. Old buddy, you weren't brainwashed after all. And Batman says, no. But I was getting so close, I figured I'd better fake it to avoid more demolishment, which they said they were at the end of it anyway. But really good scene here. I mean, they literally wrap this entire adventure up in these last three panels, right?
Right. And Batman explains that Green Lantern asks, the gun Vakla gave you to kill me with. And Batman says, I figured it had to be loaded with blanks or else Vakla wouldn't be chancing me turning it on him. But how do you turn the tables on that hyena?
Oh, that's great. And he says, I was sure my ring was somewhere in his office, but the only way I could fool him into taking me back there was by confessing the truth. Also, he didn't know I can control the ring remotely. If I'm within a few feet of it, nor that I'd planted my invisible battery in this room. And I thought, oh, okay.
That's the only thing that really gives me pause. When the hell did he put the battery in the room?
Yeah, it's like where did he have that hanging from his belt loop when they beat him up?
How could he be sure before he got there that they'd be, you know, taken into? Well, okay, they knew Colonel Vakla had the demolishment treatment, but I'll let it slide. He needed to charge the ring because it's been an indeterminate. It's been days and days and days.
Mm-hmm.
Just to keep the story moving, things happen. Then time passes, then things happen. And then more time passes and more things happen. So you have to really suspend the idea of any sort of biological necessities of anyone in this story.
You know,
so eating or drinking or using the toilet because they got to stay in their costumes. And stinky these guys must be.
Gross. Yeah, those costumes need a dry cleaning.
Yeah.
At some point, did DC ditch the, you know, you have to recharge the ring every 24 hours thing?
I don't think so. That's why he said the oath when he was in the office. Once he figured out where the ring was, he could concentrate and charge the ring.
Okay, because that drives me a little nutty.
The handy plot device that he had already put the battery there.
Yeah, see, that drives me nuts, though, because now every time you have Green Lantern somewhere for 24 hours and that's not near him, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that would get old after a while. Like, right now I'm covering Werewolf by Night in Marvel Comics, and for the first, we're probably approaching issue 30 as of this recording, And they're starting to slowly get away from it, but they up until now, they were still with, well, he can only become a werewolf under the full moon. And that's fine, but then how do you move the story along if the full moon's over and you want to see the werewolf?
Exactly. You have one adventure a month.
Yeah, it's kind of after a while, like early on, it's like, okay, cool, no problem. But literally after 30 issues, well, actually more than 30 issues, because it was in that other title before he got his own title, but it kind of gets old. And they do eventually change it where he can change of his own volition, which I enjoy that a lot more.
You want to see the werewolf, right?
Yeah. Like, come on, it's werewolf by night. It's not Jack Russell by night. It's werewolf by night. Let's get the werewolf out here, man. But yeah, the two of them start, you know, walking away in this final ending panel. And Batman says, well, I've got the demolishment burned forever in my memory. So I guess this round goes to our side. And GL says, yes, we're in a deadly silent war that has to be ended someday. And then Haney just has a little box at the bottom there, right?
Till that great day, Lantern, the world will always need brave and bold heroes like you both. End.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, again, only a 17-pager, but, you know, it's still a super fun story. It had some twists and turns. There wasn't a ton of Haney, you know, craziness in it. Not as much as you get in some issues, but... You definitely saw his, fingerprints on this, even if it wasn't his name on the comic, right?
Yeah, so this might have been my first Bob Haney story. I didn't pay much attention at that point to these names yet. I wasn't quite getting it. But this story gave me a lot of insight into Batman and Green Lantern. Maybe not all of it accurate, but... I got a great sense these are strong-willed heroes. They were heroic men. They were patriotic. They were friends. They were loyal. They cared about each other. And a little bit history, a little insight into Batman's origin and his motivation. So this gave me quite a bit of characterization without being heavy-handed characterization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. And I did think about this too, because again, I'm not as steeped in DC comics as, you know, you are, and a lot of, you know, other guys like Martin and everything. When did they finally kind of say, hey, the Batman, he isn't a fan of using a gun? Because he says earlier, you know, like, hey, I knew there were blanks in here because Vakla wouldn't have given me a gun because I could have turned it on him. But I just thought, oh, when did they kind of say, because like, would Batman have really done that still at this stage here, 1977?
In this story, yes, because that was the tool to use. I think especially Denny O'Neill was exploring that idea, and he wasn't so adamant. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly he doesn't like firearms because he doesn't know how to use them or identify them. He's still thinking as a detective, if this gun is loaded with real bullets and there are only three people in here, me, Lantern, and Vakla, I can shoot Vakla.
Mm-hmm.
Vakla must know that. So I'm going to go through with this.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, and again, even if Batman didn't want to shoot him, Vakla doesn't know that if he had, you know, sworn to not use the gun. So that was a good part there that I was just like, yeah, really? Well, how did he know? And I'm like, okay, good there. You know, again, good on Haney.
Or you can also say it, he's got to convince Vakla he has been brainwashed.
Yeah. The only thing I thought too is
do what he's told.
Like, why didn't the commie ever try to unmask Batman? You know, that's always a big thing. Like, who is the Batman? Like, I thought, oh, yeah, he never even mentioned wanting to do that.
Nope.
That was a little weird.
Green Lantern's mask didn't fade either. We're not talking that. That's a thing. We're just skipping over this stuff. They don't need to go to the bathroom. They don't need to have a sandwich. And the masks stay on because that's why you bought the comic book. I spent 30 cents to see Batman and Green Lantern, not some guy without his mask.
Not Hal, yeah. We can
understand that, Hollywood. I don't want to see some guy without his mask.
Unless he's getting out of the shower and slipping on a bar of soap, then show how. Oh man, I love it. But so great issue overall, right? This was such a ton of fun.
Oh yeah, it really is.
Yeah, I think there was a good balance here between Haney and his a little bit of his craziness, but also just a really good thought out, you know, well thought out comic, and of course a paro, right?
Good solid story.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just, it looks fabulous.
Yeah, fantastic book. So, all right, well, that's going to wrap us up here, my friend. You know, thank you for joining me for this one. I had a great time here talking about this. But, you know, you're going to probably join me in the near future here. You know, you sent me a couple of different ones. I think a couple of issues of World's Finest that you and I are going to talk about eventually, too, as well, right?
And that's zany.
Yeah, sometimes I think the World's Finest are crazier than the Brave and the Bolds with Haney. I don't know why.
Well, you know, it's on the one hand, you know, it's not that tough to craft a story with Batman and Green Lantern. It's a little harder to craft a story with Batman and Metamorpho for the 15th time. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard to craft a story of Superman and Batman again and again and again and again. Right, enough of this. I know, they have sons. Let's go.
Well, you figure it. I would always find it difficult to write a team-up story with Superman because other than Kryptonite, or magic, like what is the threat going to be that, you know, Superman can't handle? So that's an extremely difficult story to write, in my opinion.
It is, because you have to be clever enough to have a mystery that is not, you know, a physical based thing. Or the other hand, you have to have a physical threat to somebody else that Superman has to be busy with. He has to, get the tanker of liquid natural gas out of the harbor without destroying the ship, without destroying mm-hmm. the harbor, without destroying anybody. This is going to take thought and time and careful planning. Meanwhile, the bad guy's robbing a bank or something, and Batman can take care of him.
Yeah, I think I've covered 4 or 5 World's Finest at this point, and they were all pretty gonzo. Like, I remember the one.
So many aliens, right?
Yeah, 250, 152, somewhere in there. There was one I covered with Ross where there was aliens and they somehow transferred Batman's brain into the alien. Like, it was absolutely insane. I think that's the one where Batman and Superman were both naked in the comic, too. I'll have to. Wow. I was just what the heck are they doing? Haney's the best. But
yeah.
Yeah, looking. Definitely looking forward to talking about those two with you as well, my friend. But like I said, yeah, that's going to wrap us up here. But if anybody wants to find you out there roaming around, where can they look, Terry?
I'll plug my rock and roll band. I'm in a band called Stop mm-hmm. Calling Me Frank. We have a brand new single coming out on March 1st. It's our version of the old Irish traditional song, Whiskey in the Jar, just in time for Patrick's Day. I'm Ward Hill Terry and Terry O'Malley on various social media. All the usual suspects. I'm not really active. I lurk a lot. I don't post a lot. But I'm there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you are definitely not a social media whore like I am. But
you got something to promote here, Billy.
You can be found. It just might take a day or two to, you know, get a response. Not like, you
That's
know,
right. those.
It's, but yeah, you're out there. You're to be found. And like I said, yeah, get out there and, you know, support your band there, everybody, you know, support it. And I'll put a link in there so everybody, you know, can find it and all your stuff online. Cause you guys have stuff on, like, you know, Bandcamp and places that, right?
Yep. We have records on Rumbar Records, or you can find us on Bandcamp. You can, our anemic YouTube stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, just as an aside,
for free.
Yeah, just as an aside, Whiskey in the Jar by Thin Lizzy, one of my favorites. Love it.
It's our cover of Thin Lizzy's version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great band out Thin Lizzy. Yeah. You don't hear people talk about them enough. Great band.
Good for you, Billy.
They were fantastic. But all right, well, that's gonna get us out of here. So 2 weeks time, you should hear another episode coming out here. But yeah, look forward to Terry and I talking some World's Finest in the future. But as for now, that's going to do it. So we will talk to you later.
We'll sign off like Murray Baldinoff did in Brave and the Bold. B and B seeing you.